Welcome to the Inclusive Startup Playbook, the new podcast mini-series brought to you by Sifted and Morgan Stanley Inclusive Ventures Lab, the firm's in-house startup accelerator. I'm Steph Bailey, Head of Content at Sifted, and this week I'm joined by Gabrielle Lees-Brown, Head of EMEA Diversity and Inclusion at Morgan Stanley, and Adora Amora, Founder and CEO of Amica Studio. Across this month, we've been exploring the best ways to build an inclusive, resilient, and sustainable startup. This week, we're looking at how to hire inclusively. Gabrielle, you're a member of the Global Diversity and Inclusion team at Morgan Stanley, where you lead the HR strategy for EMEA. So this subject is your bread and butter. Welcome to the podcast. Could you start by talking about what hiring inclusively actually means and why it's important?
Inclusive hiring is an integral part of our business strategy, and hiring managers play a really critical role in enforcing that. You know, we aim to be an employer of choice, and the candidate experience is really critical to that. Like many firms, a significant portion of our workforce has joined Morgan Stanley in the last 3 years, and so that has undoubtedly impacted how people experience and contribute to our culture and how they innovate together. And we know that hiring managers are often making these decisions under an intense time period with perhaps lack of access to information that they need to make thoughtful decisions. And so we have taken an approach of structured, objective processes that allow for hiring managers to have consistency across how they're evaluating candidates, interviewing candidates, and making selection decisions. To aid this, last year, we launched an inclusive hiring curriculum. And then separately, we've built up a partnership across our talent acquisition team, our diversity and inclusion team, our diversity action council, our employee networks, and partners in the business to ensure that it's embedded in the way that we make decisions and that the way that we source candidates and ultimately hire them.
That's great. And to provide the startup perspective, we have Adora on the show. Welcome. Could you tell us about your hiring journey and how you've hired inclusively?
So with Amica, how we started off was specifically a media company specifically focused on telling African women's stories. And we've expanded our platform to allow creators, people to create, share, and monetize their stories. And so we've had always had a very strong focus on inclusivity from a content perspective, which also was integrated in terms of people from behind the scenes as well, who were conveying diverse stories and talent. So we've also had a very strong focus on, you know, integrating with not only, you know, with women, with Black women, specifically African women as a technology company who are woefully underrepresented. So it was deeply important to us to be able to have women across content, marketing, tech, as well, to be able to develop a platform that reflects the diverse landscape and diverse experiences of our community and our audiences as well. So I would definitely say our vision and mission ethos as a company informed our hiring strategy.
Two really great experts on the show. And so hiring inclusively does often start with writing the actual job descriptions. What are your tips on writing inclusive job descriptions?
Obviously, when it comes to, you know, not having like, you know, biased language in the job descriptions as well, or making sure that it's gender inclusive or gender neutral as well. I think sometimes subconsciously people, you know, you tend to forget that. And so we like to make sure that there is a strong understanding of that, especially when we're writing in the job descriptions. I think also in terms of having, because again, we are a platform that focuses on Black and African creators and talent, having an integration of like cultural experiences, I would say, in the JD, making sure that people, you know, have an understanding of what our vision is, what our mission is, and ensuring that it ties and is aligned with our specific goal. I think being very extremely upfront in the JD, I think, is really important, because I think sometimes people kind of have certain expectations, and I think, you know, making sure that you have that you're clear about what you stand for in your JD, and it's encapsulated in the way that you write it, as well as what the vision of the company is, allows you to attract the people that I feel like have a very strong alignment with inclusivity and diversity. So I'd say those have been like the main things that we have been working on. Obviously, you know, as a startup, we're always looking to develop and improve and refine that. But that's definitely been the ways that we've been made a very strong conscious effort, specifically when it comes to writing our JDs.
I'll add, I think that the job description is really important, right? And so to be as inclusive as possible, I think defining the characteristics of what you need in a role, the criteria for the role, as in advance as much as you possibly can is really critical. And then aligning all of your processes to assessing talent against those specific qualifications, you know, and using, going so far even to put that into a checklist that you're using to evaluate candidates as you're interviewing them, keeping it based on the true competencies that are needed for the job, will eliminate the kind of creep of subjective qualifications like cultural fit and or kind of likeness. And so this reduces the chances also that somebody is inadvertently overlooked because they're reading a job description and it doesn't seem to fit what they bring to the fore. You know, there's really interesting work being done around language and job descriptions and de-biasing the language so that men and women are equally attracted to job specifications. And I think these small adjustments can have a really profound impact on the experience of the candidate and the quantity and volume of applicants that we're ultimately able to see. And so if you can be as far-reaching as possible and get as many candidates into the system as early as possible, we know that that then begets more diversity as they progress through the organization. So more diverse applicants leads to more diverse interviews, which ultimately will help us achieve more diverse hires and representation in our respective organizations.
I think it's also important. I think who's writing the JDs is really important. Everybody has internalized, you know, biases. Everyone has some sort of privilege. So making sure that there are people who are hyper aware of that and making sure that it's not reflected in the job description and, you know, kind of making unlearning and dismantling, you know, certain modes of thinking, I think is really important. And I think making sure that people are, you know, aware of that and then making sure that's translating in the JD, I think is super important to really interrogate who is writing it, why they're writing it, and then also maybe having second, and people and diverse kind of teams to be able to add their perspectives and to make changes as well.
And when it comes to getting the candidates and that initial outreach stage, what can you do if you're not reaching diverse candidates?
I think we've moved well beyond the kind of old school mentality of there is not X talent that does Y, right? Like, we know that there's talent out in the marketplace. I think the intentionality around reaching them is mission critical. So core to our diversity and inclusion strategy and our talent acquisition strategy is ensuring that we have kind of a forward looking plan at attracting talent to the organization. You cannot compete with the speed to hire and ensure that you're being really inclusive in your practice. And so you need to build your well before you're thirsty, right? So we have, through our external partnerships and through our internal programs, we have multiple touch points in which we connect with employees so that they can experience the culture and their future colleagues and ensure that it's a fit for them. And when I say fit, I just want to be very clear. When I say cultural fit, I mean their values align to our values. And so, you know, we have events that we host that showcase our commitment to diversity and inclusion that people come to over and over and over again. And then over the course of that experience, they get to meet multiple senior leaders at the firm and see that it's possible. And this, you know, I think it's often overlooked, and it's a really essential element to ensuring that somebody will want to come to the organization, because it's less about us assessing them, but them kind of interviewing us and making that decision.
I think for us, from a startup perspective, what we've seen whenever we're not really finding, you know, as much diverse talent, I think one of the main things that we have been focused on is really diversifying the channels of where we're finding people. And it's not just exclusively, you know, on LinkedIn, but, you know, having different platforms that focus on inclusivity and diversity. We've used platforms such as Afropedia, such as Social Fix, which are job hunting platforms that have a very specific focus on attracting businesses to diverse talent, specifically Black and African talent.
Great. And once you've got diverse candidates in your pool, How do you structure your hiring process with inclusivity in mind? So thinking from screening to actually interviewing.
Yeah, this goes back to the point that I was making earlier, which is you need a, if you really want the optimal outcome, you need a rubric or a framework that ensures that the process, the selection process, the interview process, the debriefing process is as objective and as consistent as possible. And that's consistency and objectivity across teams, roles, regions, et cetera. And so when you can put a framework around that, that ensures that the candidate experience is going to be the same and that the questions that you're asking in that interview are consistent and aligned, again, back to those qualifications.
So when it comes to interviewing, should all interviews be online?
This is a really great question because when I started Amaka, we were born out of the pandemic, so we couldn't see anybody. And so at our core and at the start, we always had the mindset that, you know, we've always embraced and welcomed that, you know, interviews don't have to be in person. You know, we also hire internationally. We have team members in Lagos and Cape Town, and there are people that I've actually never met before. Personally, I think it is fine to be able to do that. Obviously, yes, you do want to meet people in person and have an understanding, but I still think it's, you can still come and understand, you know, someone's experience, someone's backgrounds as well. And also, I think it's inclusive in the sense that, you know, people may have issues around accessibility, you know, meeting certain people in certain spaces. So I think you can still have a very strong assessment of someone's skills without having it to be like a significant requirement to meet them in person.
Great. And we've touched on this already, but what's the best way to structure a job interview?
I think it's so impactful, but I do think on top of rubrics and frameworks, I think something that's really critical to that candidate experience is thinking about who the interviewers are going to be and how that will influence their perception of the firm's culture and their experience if they ultimately decide to choose us as their employer. When I was interviewing here, in the first three interviews I had, I interviewed with, you know, women of color that were managing directors at the firm. And I had grown up in law firms where you didn't see that diversity at the senior most leadership levels. And so to indicate to me that I'd be interacting and interfacing with them on a regular basis, they were my clients and my team. That was really important to me.
For us, like we typically have, you know, about 3 to 4 stages, but it's very quick. Obviously, one of the main things is like, for example, you know, specifically, I'll talk from the experience of like Black women when it comes to like, you know, job insecurity, I would say most likely to experience that. So I think it is quite detrimental to string people along on a job interview, not being very clear on the expectations. And I think just making sure that there is that clarity from start to finish of what does entail and what would happen, obviously, in the next stage and quite immediately and quite transparently. I'd also say in terms of, you know, in the actual interviews as well, I think I definitely agree with you, Gabrielle, in terms of having people who see you and look like you as well. Honestly, it's really interesting when, especially when we typically interview a lot of people who tend to look like me, and you can tell that, yes, it's a very formalized way, but it's a bit more relaxed, I would say. It's not like you're trying to trip anyone up. People feel free to ask some questions, really clear questions to understand what the role entails. And I think it's just really important to be able to have that kind of freedom. And also I encourage people, I always ask a question like, is there a question that you feel like I should have asked you? And so I think having, again, making sure that it's dynamic, there is this clear dialogue, but then also making sure that there's an understanding of what they bring and what you bring as an employer as well.
I think we need to be thoughtful about the kind of length of the interview process. And Adora, you made a brilliant point, which is if you want to diffuse the insecurity or the stress of that process when you like don't know what's next, again, that objective criteria up front, this is going to be 7 to 10 rounds of interviews with senior leaders. And you are interviewing at a time when we're hitting up against bank holidays and people may be out of the office. So helping people understand like with as much clarity as you possibly can what's coming. But then going back to this idea of having points of contact within the organization, having somebody reach out during that and or being able to reach out to somebody, I think has a profound impact on that employee experience or the candidate experience because they can, you know, I do recall during my interview process, just at the kind of inflection point for me of how many more interviews can I endure. Somebody reached out and took me to coffee and was like, how are they going? Like, what are you thinking of the people you're meeting? That was transformative for me. And it was a 20-minute coffee. And so when you're looking at talent, and I know it's impossible to do this to scale and at the speed that I was mentioning as well. But I think when you have a candidate in mind that you really want, like helping create comfort and confidence in that interview process can be really helpful in making the decision.
Great. And you've both touched on cultural fits. What's the best ways to assess whether a candidate will fit in with the culture of your company?
That's a really good question, because I think there's something we speak about quite internally as well. Sometimes we have done, like, for example, I'm not sure if you've heard, like, the Red Bull quiz, like the kind of personality quizzes at times. I wasn't very sure about that at the start, because I just felt like, you know, I think maybe it should just be objectively and specifically on what the person brings as well. So it's something that we've definitely kind of had a lot of discussions in. But I would personally say, for me and how I want to be able to assess it, is whenever I ask them in the interviews, obviously not why do you want to work at Emeka, but what are the ways that you feel like we could add value to you, you know, and vice versa. And I guess understanding the motivations really ties to your values. When people usually say, you know, they're focused on alignment, on development of the continent, for example, I know instantly that they're going to be a fit, because that is our bread and butter, essentially. So I think it's just making sure that you tease out the motivations and that how it ties to the values, and making sure that, I guess, their values mirror our values. And even if it doesn't, that's not to say that, you know, they're not the right fit, but most of the times when we've seen that there is a mirror of that keyword value, it has always really been a very, very strong relationship.
That's really interesting. And once you have hired some candidates, how can you monitor and measure the diversity of your team as you keep on hiring?
It's data, data, data. Data will tell you everything. It will help you measure progress. It will help you identify challenges. And again, it's objective, right? So it's not about what somebody's doing. It just helps us identify potential pain points and then create data-backed solutions and then measure the progress of those interventions. So it allows you to hold a mirror up to yourself and identify whether or not what you are aiming to achieve is consistent with what you're actually achieving. And I have spent my entire career using data as a vehicle by which to have this conversation, because when you're talking about inclusion, when you're talking about people and talent, it's a very personal topic for a lot of people. So you do have to have kind of the very objective approach and say, this is what we're seeing and here, and have a solution to it. Like giving somebody feedback without a proposed solution is just your opinion. So I think going in and saying, here's the pain point we see, here's what's been really effective in another division that had the same challenge, or our peers, like we're all solving for the exact same outcomes. So what can we learn and share and embed best practices in what we do, and then measure.
Yeah, I definitely want to echo Gabrielle's point as well. Definitely, you know, around data. I mean, obviously we're a small team, so there isn't a vast array of data, but it also, the fact that we have a kind of a small team to really see, it's very tangible to be able to see who's the head of this in this division and why, and you know, the kinds of people that make up a certain department. When I speak, you know, with our HR director, we typically, you know, obviously have like a routine assessment, especially annual assessment as well, on people's experiences as well. And also measuring the experiences of people, like, again, with their specific backgrounds, or specific people not happy. And is there a reason? And to be able to use and leverage that data to have a better understanding of that as well. Again, I think it's something that we are also still refining and growing and learning on and hyper aware of. But I think definitely the idea of data and making sure it's integrated in your employee surveys and even exit interviews as well. I think it is important to be able to ask and understand from once they hire, during until maybe after, how was your experience and the process like when it came to diversity and inclusivity.
And if I can just add, I think that I'll call it industry research is really critical. So I don't think that the average consumer can draw the through line from startups to financial services. But Adora, you and I sit in similar seats. And I think, you know, the clear distinction is with a startup who's, you know, a founder is building something new, they're not trying to disrupt historical homogenous teams and create more diverse teams. You get to lay the foundation of what innovation and what inclusion looks like for you. And then again, we can compare business models with one another and best practices with one another to create change across both of our industries. And I think they're so interdependent on each other, and we can learn and benefit so much from collaborations like Morgan Stanley and the Inclusive Ventures Lab. We should always be this, you know, I've been at this for a very long time, and I think the solutions are still yet to be determined in a really robust way. And so we should always be learning. We should always be collaborating. We should always be, you know, we're not competing for talent. We're, people are going to land where they're going to land. And like we said earlier, there is a ton of talent out in the marketplace. I think I really benefit from spending time with the partners in the Inclusive Ventures Lab, because I see that innovation and those hiring practices and your marketing and branding in a completely unique way. And that's an educational opportunity for me.
I think, you know, when I started out, hiring an HR director was like actually one of my first hires. And I know that, you know, when you're starting off, obviously with limited time, resources, you're not really, you know, I guess your mind isn't usually thinking about HR from that perspective. But I think I had really great advisors and people like helping me and, you know, understand the value of that. Because not only did it make people feel comfortable that, okay, this is like there's structure and order in the startup, but also it really wanted, I wanted to learn and understand how to make sure that we are measuring things around diversity and inclusivity in terms of hiring and measuring how we, you know, we were showing up for our team immediately from the start. And I think that allowed us to attract the right talent and align with them again, not only from the skills perspective, but from the values-based perspective as well. So I think people from a startup perspective maybe need to be intentional about it at the start. Even though I know sometimes there are a lot of different things you're prioritizing, but I think in the long run, I think it's a really, really important investment.
We're talking about hiring in terms of process and rubric. And I just want to personalize my perspective that your best brand ambassadors and your best finger on the pulse of the industry is your own talent. And so we can't underestimate the employee experience and their trust and, you know, desire to connect us to their networks. They know exactly what it takes to be successful at a firm like ours or yours, Dora. And I think we need to leverage our talent as absolutely essential to our recruiting practices. And I think we are very, very fortunate to do that. But I think it could be operationalized and done to scale in the industry in a way more meaningful approach. And I think that would help us to build more, again, inclusive, diverse candidate pools to get to better hiring outcomes.
That's all we have time for. If you want to hear more about the inside workings of Europe's startups, explore the latest workplace trends, and read helpful resources, sign up to our Startup Life newsletter, which is co-written by my co-host, Anissa. And make sure you tune into our next podcast next week, where we will be discussing how to manage trust. You can also find all the articles and facts mentioned in this episode in the podcast description. Thank you to Morgan Stanley for sponsoring this podcast series. Apply now through March 15th for the 2024 Morgan Stanley Inclusive Ventures Lab, an accelerator for tech and tech-enabled startups to access capital, resources, and connections to help further develop and scale their companies, and to advance a more equitable investment landscape. Learn more at morganstanley.com/MSIVL.